And right now, as a church, we're in the middle of this conversation called Finding Love. And we've been talking about this idea of loving and being loved and how God, through His Word and through the Scriptures, guides us and navigates us on this pursuit. And we've been looking specifically at this book called Ruth. And in this book of Ruth, we see this story of Ruth and Boaz and how God is bringing them together and drawing them together. And so we've been looking at that and seeing how God is using this story to inform our story, to inform our pursuit of love. And today we're going to kind of wrap this whole thing up. And as we do that, we're going to take two final steps. And we're sticking with this story of Ruth as we do that. And so when we left Ruth last week, we found her in kind of an interesting situation, because she had come to this man Boaz and she had basically asked him to redeem her family. Now, if you haven't been with us, you need a little bit of context for this, because this, what we're about to talk through, isn't going to make any sense if you don't understand a little bit of the story before we got here. You see, Ruth finds herself in a situation where she's lost her husband, and so inside of her culture, she has no ability to be able to provide for herself economically. But inside the nation of Israel, God had provided for people who found themselves in this situation. And so when a woman was to lose her husband, it became the responsibility of the family to be able to care for her. And so the brother would then take her as his wife, and she would become a part of his family. And then the children that he had with her, or the children that she already had, would grow up and would then take over what was originally her family, or her and her dead husband's family, right? And then the families would again split off. And so what Ruth is doing as we leave her last week is she's coming to Boaz and asking him to redeem her family, or to, as a relative, to step in, to take her as his wife, and to take, and as we read through this, you're going to see that there's a lot more to it than just the fact that she would be his wife, but there's also this aspect of land and redeeming the land that belonged to that family, or that was in this family's inheritance. And inheritance is a part of this whole conversation as well. But as we've been walking through this for the past couple weeks, we've seen Ruth and Boaz coming together and how God is kind of bringing these two together. And then last week, it finally comes to this point where she comes to him and says, "Listen, will you redeem my family? Will you take me as your wife?" And that's kind of where we left it. And God's been teaching us a lot of really cool things through that. And as we look at kind of the end of this story today, I think we're going to see that He continues to do that as this story comes to a close. Now, after Ruth asks Boaz this question, Boaz informs her last week that he actually can't redeem her. He actually can't take her as his wife because there's a relative that's closer to her than he is. And so he sends her home and he says, "Listen, I'm going to go take care of this. You go home to your mother-in-law and then I'll take care of it and I'll come and tell you how this thing works out." And that's where we kind of step back into the story today. And Naomi is waiting at home, and that's Ruth's mother-in-law. She's waiting at home, and Ruth finally arrives home, and Naomi's wondering, okay, what happened? What took place? In verse 16 of chapter 3, it says this. It says, "When Ruth went back to her mother-in-law, Naomi asked, 'What happened, my daughter?' Ruth told Naomi everything Boaz had done for her, and she added, 'He gave me these 6 scoops of barley and said, don't go back to your mother-in-law empty-handed.'" Again, talking about how Boaz is providing. In this entire story, we've seen the character of Ruth and Boaz and everything that they do. So then Naomi said to her, "Just be patient, my daughter, until we hear what happens. The man won't rest until he has settled things today." And here's the deal. For the last couple of weeks, we've been kind of walking through the story and then looking at the principles afterwards. But today, what I want to do is actually look at the principles as we walk through the story. And it doesn't take us very long to get to the first principle. And I realize, even as I say this, I'm a little bit nervous about saying this and pointing this out, because I'm not exactly sure how everyone's going to take this. But our first principle today that we learn inside this story is, for those of you who are ladies, you need to learn to be patient inside of relationships. And sometimes there are going to be times when, as we see in this story, Ruth comes home and her mother-in-law says, he turns to her and says, "Listen, you need to wait and let him do what he needs to do." And the truth is, this is difficult for all of us. right? But we're talking about specifically in terms of relationship. But let me break out of the relationship point of view for a second and talk about just every single one of us, right? Because the principles we've been learning here don't just apply to relationships, they apply to every single area of our life. So at the beginning of this conversation, we talked about trusting God in our lives instead of trusting ourselves, trusting God in our relationships as opposed to trusting ourselves. And that principle applies across the board. The same thing is true of this, where sometimes in our tendency in life is to believe, one, that we can be in control, and then two, to always be in control, or try to make sure we're always in control. And so this idea of patience is something that's very difficult for us. But in all of our lives, if we're going to move into a relationship with God where we're saying, okay, God, I'm following you, I'm trusting you over myself, then we're going to have to learn to be patient. And there are going to be times when we're just going to have to wait. And God's going to say, listen, I'm going to take care of this. We're going to see God saying, I'm going to take care of this. And we're just going to have to wait. And we're going to have to trust him to take care of it. And so really, it doesn't matter who you are today. This is true for all of us. Something that we need to be reminded of over and over and over again. And something that's really difficult for us. And sometimes in our lives, we'll begin this journey and we'll say, okay, God, I'm trusting you. But then things don't happen exactly the way we thought they would happen right away. And so we take control again. And we end up making things worse. But if you trust him, he'll take care of it. And so you see that this principle applies to all of us. But in particular, in relationships, I want to talk to you, ladies, about this idea of patience. Now, inside of relationships, there are a couple things that you need to understand and a couple reasons why it's going to be crucial that you have patience in relationships. Right? And you're going to like this part of the conversation because there are two of the number one reasons you have to have patience if you're going to be inside of a great relationship is that you're just better at it than we are. Right? Your relational intelligence is far superior to whoever you're with. Right? And if you just accept that at the beginning, you're going to be so much better off. Right? You know what needs to happen in the relationship before he's even thought about the question at all. All right? You know not only what needs to be done, but how it needs to be done. You're going to know weeks before he can even formulate the question in his head. All right? Your relational, and it's funny and we kind of joke about it, but it's actually true. Your relational intelligence on the whole, and like I said as we began this conversation, I'm going to make general comments, and these aren't true across the board, but in general, your relational intelligence is much higher than his. And not only that, but your value, or the value that you as women tend to put on relationships, is more accurate than his. Women have far better relationships than men ever will because of the fact that they value relationships so much, and you value it a lot more than he does in general. And so if these things are going to be true, you're going to have to be patient. And there are going to be times in your relationship where you're going to have to wait for him to catch up. You're going to have to wait for him to finally come to this conclusion. You're going to have to wait for him to finally get done what needed to get done. And patience is going to be a big part of relationships for you. And it's going to be really difficult. Because you're going to know what needs to be done and how to be able to get it done. And you're going to be tempted to step in and do it for him. Right? Now let me break this down for you by where you are in relationships. And I'm just going to give you, there are a lot of different ways this is going to play out inside of your life. But I'm going to give you a couple examples depending on where you are right now on this journey of finding love. Right? Some of you are here and you're seeking, and there's someone that you're interested in, and you know that you're interested in them, and you would like to go out with them, but it seems like they are taking forever. You need to wait. And here's the deal. I'm not one of those guys that says, oh, no, you know, girls should never, ever ask a guy out, or girls should never. That's not what I'm saying. But what I am saying is this. And this is really crucial for you as far as determining, okay, who am I going to spend my life with? If you find yourself in a relationship where you're constantly having to be the initiator, women, you're not in a relationship that you want to be in long term. If you find yourself in a relationship where you're constantly having to pull him along, where you're waiting and he's not responding, then you probably need to walk away. The second thing is for those of you who are in relationships where now you're beginning to be committed to one another and you've been dating for a while. I said this a couple years ago, and there are a few people who are married because of this. And so I'm going to go back to this. You're in relationships, you've been dating for a few years, it's great, it's awesome. You're in love. And you have already decided that this is the person that you want to spend the rest of your life with, because you come to these decisions much quicker than he seems to come to these decisions, and he seems to be dragging his feet. And everything inside of you wants to say, listen, and it seems like every other conversation you want to go back to this conversation of, when are we going to get married? I once sat next to a couple in a restaurant. Anna and I were in the city, and we were at one of those restaurants where they tell you you get your own table, but you really don't. Right? There's like 4 inches between tables, so you're really just all sitting together. And we're sitting next to this couple, and it was one of the most awkward moments of my life. Anna and I didn't talk the entire time because we were just enjoying this conversation so much. And in this conversation, like, they sit down, and she could not have dropped more, like, hints about the fact that they should be married already. Like, inside of half an hour, it must have been, like, 15 to 20 hints. And they weren't even, like, subtle. It was like, yeah, I was at the holiday party last week or with my family, and my uncles just kept asking me why I'm not married yet. And he's just sitting there like this. I mean, she talks the entire time, and she just kept bringing it back to this. And some of you are in this situation, and you're like, okay, come on already. This is taking forever. And I'll say to you exactly what I said to those who are seeking. Listen, if you feel like you're in a situation where you're constantly having to initiate one, that's a red flag. Because you don't want to be in a relationship where you're going to constantly be dragging the other person along, and you don't want to be in a relationship with someone who can't get it done. But you do need to have patience. Because we laugh about it, but it's true. It's going to take him probably a little bit longer. Now, in saying that, I will tell you the other side of that. You do not need to have indefinite patience. As a matter of fact, you should not have indefinite patience. Because one of the things you understand and one of the things that you realize about relationships is that relationships are really, really important. And you're not wrong about that. You understand that you don't want to live your life with just one person in the story. And that the more people in the story, the better the story is. You understand that. You value that. And so you don't want to waste your time. And you're right. And so you need to be patient. But here's the deal. And I said this a couple years ago. And I'm not kidding. There are people who are married because of this. You need to give him a deadline. To be able to say, okay, listen, we're in this relationship. We've been in this relationship for a while, and I've been patient. And it was funny. The last time I talked about this, I was thinking in terms of years, and we had a couple who walked out, and they walked out of our church, and she looked at him, and she said, you have 3 months. And we are either engaged in 3 months, or we are not going to be together anymore. And you say, that's crazy. No, because what you feel is right. And relationships are important, and commitment is important. And for those of you who find yourself in that situation, you need to be patient with him. Allow him to be able to go through this process, but not indefinitely. And then for those of you who are in committed relationships, in relationships where you're married, one of the things that happens when you find yourself in a relationship where you're constantly initiating and you're constantly dragging them along, and one of the conversations that I have all the time is with couples who this is how it worked, this is how it happened, and then they get married and nothing changes because everything that happens inside the relationship, she has to drag him into. And you find yourself in a situation, and inside of the premarital counseling that I do, I talk about this a lot, because you find yourself in a situation where it's like you're a mom to a 40-year-old kid. And you're stepping into, it seems like over and over again, you're stepping into situations and you're the one who you feel like you're a disciplinarian. It's like, this needs to happen. When is this going to happen? And the problem is there's no really clearly communicated expectations. And so my advice to you, for those of you who are in this situation, is for some of you couples, you need to sit down and you need to decide, okay, who's responsible for what? Who's going to get done what needs to get done in these different situations? You need to divide those up. One of the books that we have on that back table back there is a book called Boundaries in Marriage, and it talks about this. It talks about the fact that you need to assign different things to one another, and there are things inside the relationship that you're each going to take care of. And you need to stick to those. And for some of you ladies, you find yourselves in these situations and you need to stick to those boundaries. First, you need to clearly establish those things, and then you need to stick to it. And if it doesn't happen, if he doesn't carry through, if he doesn't get it done, it doesn't get done. But you need to stop doing it for him. Because if you do that, you're going to be in a relationship where you're going to be the mom. And that's going to be okay for a few years. But eventually, it's not going to be okay anymore. And it's going to blow up. And you say, well, he's not going to get it done. He's not going to get it done. I can't be patient. I can't wait. Nothing's ever going to happen. If you find yourself in a situation where the expectations are clear and you're being patient, but nothing's getting done, then you need to get help. And I'm serious about that. Because you do not want to live in a relationship where you're the mom. But at the same time, before you get to that point, sometimes you just need to give him a chance and give him time. Now the story continues from there, and there's a lot more to it. The beginning of chapter 4, it says, Boaz went to the town gate and took a seat there. Just then, the family redeemer he had mentioned came by, so Boaz called out to him. Again, Boaz has identified this other guy who's closer to Ruth, and so he says, listen, I'm going to go talk to this guy and find out if I can redeem your family instead of him. So he calls out to this guy. He says, come over here and sit down, friend. I want to talk to you. So they sat down together. Then Boaz called 10 leaders from the town and asked them to sit as witnesses. And Boaz said to the family redeemer, you know Naomi, who came back from Moab. She is selling the land that belonged to our relative Elimelech. I thought I should speak to you about it so that you can redeem it if you wish. If you want to take the land, then buy it here in the presence of these witnesses. But if you do not want it, let me know right away, because I'm next in line to redeem it after you. Again, like I told you before, this has to do with inheritance and land. As a part of the nation of Israel, every single family had land that belonged to them. And this land passed from generation to generation. And so as a part of Naomi's family, Ruth, or whoever redeemed Ruth's family, then took on this land. And they would purchase this from whoever it had been sold to after Ruth's family had left the nation. The man replied, all right, I'll redeem it. He's excited because he sees the land there, and he's excited about this. Then Boaz told him, "Of course, if you purchase the land from Naomi, it also requires that you marry Ruth, the Moabite widow. That way she can have children who will carry on her husband's name and keep the land in the family." And so he says, but you should also know that as a part of this, you're going to have, it's not actually going to be yours in the long run. This isn't, and the system wasn't set up so that people could just begin grabbing more and more and more. The system was set up so that he's actually helping Ruth to be able to reestablish her family name and to carry on this family. And so he says, you know, but just so you know, if you do this, then this is the situation. Then the guy responds back. He says, "Then I can't redeem it," the family redeemer replied, "because this might endanger my own estate. You redeem the land. I cannot do it." Now this shows a little bit about the character of the relative who was closer than Boaz. Verse 7. "Now in those days it was custom in Israel for anyone transferring a right of purchase to remove his sandal and hand it to the other party. This publicly validated the transaction. So the other family redeemer drew off his sandal as he said to Boaz, 'You buy the land.' Then Boaz said to the elders and the crowd standing around, 'You are witnesses that today I have bought from Naomi all the property of Elimelech, Chilion, and Mahlon.'" That was Ruth and her sister-in-law's husband. "And with the land, I have acquired Ruth, the Moabite widow of Mahlon, to be my wife. This way she can have a son to carry on the name of her dead husband and to inherit the family property here in his hometown. You are all witnesses." And I love it. Because not only does Boaz go into the situation and get it done, but he's like kind of a little bit tricky about it. Because he wants Ruth. And so in this situation, he steps in, he's like, "All right, listen, there's this land. You want to..." "Yeah, but if you do that, I just want to let you know, like, you're going to have to reestablish Ruth's family, and there's all these..." And he, like, lays out this trap for this guy. But the point that I want for you to get this morning is, for those of you who are guys, he gets it done. That's something we're not always very good at. But he gets it done. And guys, there's a reason that the memory verse today is what it is. I put it in there specifically for you. And if you look at the memory verse today, in Proverbs 18:22, it says this. It says, "The man who finds a wife finds a treasure and receives favor from the Lord." Now here's why I gave you that verse today, guys. Because as guys, it's really easy for us to walk through our lives and to buy into this lie that our career and our car and all these things are important. And culture tells us that we can live our lives just focused on these areas of our life and be full. But it's not true. And here's the deal. If you live your life like that, you will one day get to the end of your story and look back at your story and realize that for most of it, there was only one character. And it's going to be a huge mistake. And you're going to realize that all these things that we tend to live for didn't matter. And that needs to change. And I realize there are a lot of different things that play into that. I heard a pastor talking to his church a couple months ago, and he said something really interesting. He was talking about some of the decisions that the ladies inside of his church were making, and he was talking about how the reason, or one of the contributing factors to these decisions, was the fact that so many of the men in the church weren't man enough to get things done. And it was interesting because as I heard him talk through that, I realized that he was right. And inside of our community here, men, we've got to get better at getting things done. And there are all sorts of different things that come into this equation when it comes to us and how we're relating to those around us inside of these relationships and how we're pursuing love. And throughout the, you know, throughout the last couple of years, as I've been having conversations with those of you who are in this situation where maybe you're seeking love or you're in situations where you're trying to navigate this road of, okay, how do I begin to step into a relationship like this? There are all sorts of different conversations that I'm having with you, and I'm beginning to realize that for a lot of you, especially those of you who are really incredible men of character, that you're looking at this situation of dating and this situation of pursuing people around you, and because you're misunderstanding the situation, or because, like we talked about last week, you're kind of disengaging from the situation, you're missing out. And for a lot of you, you're scared of these situations. Because in order for us to get it done, it means that you're going to have to risk. It means you're going to have to ask her out before you know the answer. It means that you're probably going to get rejected sometimes. It means that, you know what, it isn't always going to work out exactly the way you hoped it would work out. And sometimes I'll have conversations with guys and they'll say, but I don't want to do that. I don't want to hurt people. And I understand that. And I understand where you're coming from with this. But part of the reason you're struggling with that is because you don't understand how it's supposed to work or how it's supposed to look. Because you're still looking at dating and this whole situation exactly the same way that the world looks at this situation. And for the world, dating really is the bachelor or the bachelorette. Right? It's this situation where we're stepping into these relationships and we're evaluating the people around us and deciding whether or not they're good enough for them to make it to the end. Whether or not they're going to get the rose. And so what we've done inside the church is we said, well, you know what, it shouldn't be based on all these superficial things, but we haven't actually adopted the system at all. We haven't actually brought love and grace into the system at all, like we talked about last week, and I'm going to kind of build on what we talked about last week with this. And so what we do inside the church is we step into these relationships and we begin to walk through this situation and we evaluate this other person. And okay, we're not evaluating them just based upon how they look. We're evaluating them based on all these other factors and character and some of the things that we've talked about inside this series. And we're deciding still at the end of this thing who gets the rose. And for some of you, you're terrified to step into this because you're like, this is just kind of a hurtful system. And if you continue to think about it that way, if you continue to walk through it that way, then yeah, that's true. And what I'm about to say isn't going to make any sense to you when I first say it, but stick with me because I'm telling you, the illustration fits. Because we need to begin to shift the way we look at this process, and we need to move away from this idea of the bachelor and the bachelorette, and we need to move more towards this idea of the biggest loser. I told you, it's not going to make any sense. Right now you're like, what is he talking about? Some of you are just mad at me. But what I mean by that is this. At the end of The Bachelor, there's one winner. And everyone else loses. At the end of The Biggest Loser, there's one left. But everyone wins. Everyone is better. And when it comes to this idea of finding love, this fits the principles that God gives us. And this idea that I'm going to step into relationships to evaluate this other person, if they're spiritually where they should be in order for me to be in a relationship with them, or if their character where they should be in order for me to be in a relationship with them, it doesn't fit God. Because for God, every relationship, it doesn't matter what relationship it is, every relationship is about making the other person better. And you need to step into these relationships and begin to look at this process as an opportunity to make the people around you better. And yeah, it might not mean, you may not choose to spend the rest of your life together, but you're making one another better. And at the end, everyone wins. And guys, even inside of this, there's a couple things that you just need to confront if you're going to get it done. And one of them is the fact that porn has lied to you. And at the point where we are inside of our culture, that means I'm talking to almost all of you. And porn has lied to you and told you that there is this idea of a perfect woman. And then it's lied to you and given you the idea that if she actually existed, you could get her. A few weeks ago, I was reading through this poll, and it was a CNN study. It was about how we have overinflated views of ourselves, and it was talking about how this has happened in the life of men. And one of the most overinflated areas of our lives was specifically the way that men viewed themselves physically. The point of the story is, guys, we don't look as good as you think you look. And I'm dead serious about that. And some of you are sitting here saying, this is just mean. What are you doing? And part of the reason that we're not able, and part of the reason that you're not able to get it done, is because of the fact that porn has lied to you. And women, our culture has told you that you don't look good because you don't fit in this model. And it's crap. And guys, it's lied to you about what's valuable. And guys, if we're going to get it done, you got to leave those lies behind. You got to step outside of this idea that we're evaluators, and you have to become leaders. And a leader doesn't walk into a relationship and say, is this person at a certain level? A leader walks into relationships and says, how can I help this person be better? And guys, we have got to begin to get it done. We got to leave behind all this fear of rejection and all this fear of how things could work out. And man, am I going to be a leader enough to make sure that I don't hurt those around me? And we've got to say, okay, I'm going to get it done. And we've got to begin to move. And so the last thing we see about this man Boaz, the last place that we see his character, is that when he says he's going to get it done, he gets it done. And that means for those of us who are inside of committed married relationships, that our relationship to-do list isn't the last to-do list we get to, but the first to-do list. That means when we tell that person that we're in this relationship with, that we're going to take care of this because this is our responsibility, we take care of it. And I'm telling you guys, if you begin to do this, if you begin to follow God in this, He's leading us to something beautiful. And guys, you've got to give up on this lie that the world's told every single one of us, that the best life is this single life filled with all this stuff. It's awful. Compared to the kind of loving relationships that we see inside of God's Word. I want you to hear how the story finishes. Verse 11. It says, "Then the elders and all the people standing at the gate replied, 'We are witnesses. May the Lord make this woman who is coming into your home like Rachel and Leah,'" these people, these mothers of generations, "'from whom all the nation of Israel descended. May you prosper in Ephrath,'" I should have practiced that word, "'and be famous in Bethlehem. And may the Lord give you descendants by this young woman who will be like those of our ancestor Perez and the son of Tamar in Judah.' So Boaz took Ruth into his home and she became his wife. When he slept with her, the Lord enabled her to become pregnant and she gave birth to a son. Then the woman of the town said to Naomi, 'Praise the Lord who has now provided a redeemer for your family. May this child be famous in Israel. May he restore your youth and care for you in your old age, for he is the son of your daughter-in-law who loves you and who has been better to you than seven sons.' Then Naomi took the baby and cuddled him to her breast, and she cared for him as if he were her own. The neighbor woman said, 'Now at last Naomi has a son again,' and they named him Obed. He became the father of Jesse and the grandfather of David." I love how they throw that in at the end. I love how the writer just ends it with this little line. "Oh yeah, and he was the grandfather of David, the greatest king Israel has ever had." And here's the deal, guys. Throughout this series, we've talked through a lot of different things that God is guiding us in and leading us in. And if you pick up God's word, you're going to find him over and over and over again inside of relationships, guiding and directing you, navigating your path. But what it all comes down to is this: do you trust him? It all comes back to that first conversation. Do you trust him? Do you trust him enough to take the risks, guys? Do you trust him enough to be patient? Do you trust him to build your character instead of your appearance? Do you trust him? And the writer of Ruth wants you to know he can be trusted, especially when it comes to this. Even though this may be one of the most difficult areas of your life to trust him, he is good. Father, today as we look at this, I pray that as we continue through this year, Father, you're teaching us so many different things about how to be able to love those around us, how to be able to care for those around us, how to be able to move in these situations in ways that carry love and grace. And Father, I pray that today, as those here interact with these words of how, again, you're lovingly as a Father stepping into our life and guiding us and leading us, Father, I just pray that they'd be overwhelmed with the security that comes with knowing that you are with us. that you are good and that you can be trusted. Father, I thank you for who you are. In Jesus' name, amen.